Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, May 13th, 2006. I'm Harley Schlanger. I'm your host today. We've had in the last days absolutely dramatic news on the financial markets, really confirming completely Lyndon LaRouche's April 20th forecast when he said that the combined effects of the commodity hyperinflation, which he brought to people's attention last fall, that the effects of this commodity hyperinflation combined with the popping of the housing bubble mean that the financial system as currently exists has an outer limit of a life expectancy of September of this year, and it appears to be cratering even much more quickly than that. The commodities prices are unbelievable. Copper has gone from $6,000 a ton to almost $8,800 a ton in less than 45 days. And a lot of people don't know what that means. We'll talk about some of these things on the show today. But copper is used for virtually every kind of process of conducting an electrical current. So think about what that means in terms of consumer goods as well as industrial processes. At the same time, the plans are moving ahead for dismantling the U.S. automobile sector. And we've identified 64 plants in the United States which are slated for massive cuts or shutdown within the next 2 years, many of them starting almost immediately. The Delphi Parts Company is on the chopping block right now. It's the lead story in this week's Executive Intelligence Review, LaRouche on Auto Emergency Legislation Now. Now, this is not really about the auto sector per se, but it's about the global financial system and global financial reorganization. So we'll be taking a continental look today at this process, at both the disintegration, but more importantly, about the process underway, initiated by Lyndon LaRouche last week, to reorganize, in a sense, the day-to-day functioning of our organization, especially the LaRouche Youth Movement, so that we can have a top-down approach day-to-day, both on the intelligence and on the operational effect of the mobilization to get LaRouche's emergency legislation implemented. Today we'll be hearing from Washington, D.C. We have Summer Shields there, who's one of the LaRouche Youth Movement members who's working on coordinating a war room out of Leesburg. We have Emiliano Andino in Mexico City, and we're very happy to have Emiliano on. He's actually the Buenos Aires leader of the LaRouche Youth Movement, but he's been in Mexico City, and he'll tell us why when we talk to him. And we also have in the Leesburg studio Dennis Small, who is the longtime Executive Intelligence Review editorial board member with special responsibility for Ibero-America and also international economics. So we will take your questions. We'll take emails at radio@larouchepub.com, and I'll be giving that out again later. But let's get right to the issue at hand. Summer Shields, who's actually in the Oakland office of the LaRouche Youth Movement, is now temporarily in the war room in Leesburg. Today he's in Washington. Summer, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Harley.
Give us a sense of what you're doing with the war room.
Well, as of now, I'd say the central feature of what we've been able to do is providing up-to-the-minute updates on exactly what's going on with the youth movement. And I guess one of the concerns that Lyndon LaRouche had was that instead of people sitting around playing with their clippings, and what he described, what he was talking about was people simply reporting on what's going on in the world situation, which is probably a result of what we've been doing anyway as a movement, as a youth movement, in shaping the political situation, is actually getting up-to-the-minute reports on what we've been doing as a youth movement. And three of us, myself, Sharon, and Heather, have been kind of basically in the center, in the central command, getting reports throughout the course of the day, writing them up, so we can have as concise of an overview of what's going on inside the United States as possible.
So are you getting reports on a timely fashion, Summer?
Pretty much. We get them 3 hours before everyone else does, usually.
Are you able to keep up with all the activity?
We're getting better, that's for sure.
And from what you've been reporting outward, then, it seems to be we've got a breathtaking process underway.
Completely. You've seen a change in the intelligence staff. In just the four days I've been here, you've seen a change in the intelligence staff in Leesburg. You're able to really get a sense across the board on what the questions, usually a question that's being asked in California is the same question that's being asked in Boston by the general sections of the population, especially concerning hyperinflation of commodities and other things that are happening right now politically.
Well, we'll come back to you in a couple minutes, but do you have a good sense then that you can report to us that there is motion now that the emergency auto legislation is on the table, even though the pamphlet is not out yet?
Huge motion. We've got this meetings daily with various county chairs, various elected bodies in cities, especially in Michigan. And as you know, we've been in Washington, D.C. a whole lot. And we've also had different meetings that were set up in Sacramento in the state of California, all about Lynn's latest his auto legislation.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll come back to you in a few minutes to get more of an in-depth report on that summer. Now we're joined by Dennis Small, who will be able to give us a picture of the dramatic developments on financial markets and what exactly we have to do about it. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Harley. Glad to be here.
So what is going on?
Well, one of the things I'd like to just add to what Summer was talking about is that there's also beginning to be international activity around LaRouche's auto legislation, which I think is quite significant. We had a report that came in from Europe from a meeting in Berlin that was chaired by Helga Zepp LaRouche, where the question of industrial reconstruction in Germany was discussed in the context of the central battle going on in the United States around the auto question. Similarly, we have LaRouche youth movement deployments in Canada and also across Ibero-America, which I'm sure Emiliana will be telling us about in a minute. But I think this international aspect on the mobilization is worth noting, and it will undoubtedly help to completely shake up Washington and the entire country, which is now going on, as we were just hearing about.
Well, and it is an international financial crisis. It's not limited to the United States and the dollar.
Yeah, exactly. What people internationally who have been organized by the LaRouche movement understand is that the central battle must be won inside the United States, but that the battle in their respective countries, if fought on that same basis with a clear focus around LaRouche's ideas, actually contribute to winning that battle and is the only way to win the battle in their respective countries, for example, in Mexico or Argentina. Now, on the hyperinflation question, which you were asking about, this is really very interesting. People who've read EIR may recall that in the study we recently published of 14 leading commodities and the rates of hyperinflation that we've seen in those commodities over the last year and a half, we have a stunning situation. These commodities include, as you were just mentioning, copper is, of course, the most scandalous one, whose price is just going through the ceiling entirely. I mean, it's worth noting that the penny, the U.S. penny, is made out of copper. And if copper prices continue to go up, pretty soon a penny is going to be worth a dollar. And that's going to create a pretty interesting situation.
And who knows what the dollar will be worth?
Well, a penny. So there you have it. But if you look at these commodities, copper, lead, zinc, gold, and so forth, the 14 commodities we studied rose in 2005 at an annual rate of 25%, which is already very fast. In the first quarter of 2006, those same 14 commodities rose on average 25% again, but that was just in one quarter. So that gives you an annual rate of growth of 122%. And then just looking at the first 3 weeks of the second quarter of this year, the annualized rate of growth of those prices of those commodities was 530%. So you've got a function here which is going up from a 25% increase to 122% increase to a 530% increase. The rate of increase is rising. And this is simply indicative of the underlying process of blowout of global financial markets which are underway. absolutely cannot be solved by the policies of the U.S. Federal Reserve under Helicopter Bernanke. There is only one solution, and those are the ideas that LaRouche has been presenting around the auto reconversion program and the whole international policy to get the world economy back on its feet.
Dennis, I just want to give a something that hit me really hard when I was talking to a person in communications in California this week to bring home what it means. He is involved in telecommunications, and he purchases spools of copper wire. And last year, he said in November, he paid $400-something dollars per spool of copper wire. He said now it's almost $1,200 for the same spool of copper wire. And that should give people a sense of what this means, that virtually every commodity, these industrial commodities, are used in industrial processes.
Yeah, exactly. These commodities, which are at the center of the global hyperinflationary process, are linked into, they are essential parts, as you're saying, to the physical economy of the world. So when you have these rates of growth of 530% per year, and a rate of growth, which is now very similar to what happened in Weimar Germany in 1923, you're talking about blowing out the very guts of the global physical economy. And that ties in very directly to one or two comments I wanted to make about the situation in Ibero-America, because part of the financial oligarchy strategy in this crisis is to use commodities as the ultimate way of seizing control over a collapsing system. In other words, they're taking up positions around control of these commodities so that when the whole shebang comes down, they'll be in a politically and economic controlling situation. So the question of who owns and controls and uses copper and aluminum and gold and so forth is crucial. Are they going to be used for actual economic development of nations, or are they going to be held hostage to this disintegrating world system? Now, I did a quick review of the 14 commodities in the market basket that Paul Gallagher pulled together in EIR, and I compared them to information we had pulled together about a decade ago, 1995, and we can update this, of the percentage of world production of major raw materials which comes from Ibero-America. And it's quite interesting. 8 out of those 14 commodities, a large part of global production comes from Ibero-America. For example, 41% of world silver comes from Ibero-America. 32% of copper, one-third of the world's copper you were just describing, it comes from Ibero-America. 28% of the tin, 20% of the zinc, 28% of the bauxite, and so on. So you have a heavy overlap of the major commodities owned in Ibero-America with those that are the guts of this hyperinflationary blowout. Therefore, the battle in Ibero-America in particular for adopting a LaRouche-oriented development approach around raw materials as a transition to high-technology industrial development in conjunction with the battle around the reconversion of the auto industry in the United States is one and the same battle over replacing this bankrupt world system with the new Bretton Woods proposal that LaRouche has outlined.
All right. Thank you, Dennis. That was Dennis Small from the Executive Intelligence Review, and we'll get back to you in a few minutes for more on the global view of this. You're listening to The LaRouche Show. If you have questions, we've already started getting some emails in. You can send them to us at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. Also, if you want to get copies of these reports that Dennis is referring to in the Executive Intelligence Review, and also the new pamphlet that will be coming out soon on the emergency auto legislation, you can call us at 888-347-3258, and I'll be giving that number out several more times today, 888-347-3258. Now, I'm delighted to have our next guest with us today, Emiliano Andino, who may be known to you if you've followed the situation in Ibero-America, part of the courageous group of LaRouche youth members in Argentina who have been doing a wonderful job there. Emiliano's in Mexico City right now. Emiliano, what are you doing in Mexico City?
Hi, Harley, and hi to everyone. Well, what I'm doing here, we are now working every youth movement in Ibero-America, the youth that is studying LaRouche's ideas, we are working together as a whole, as a unified group, in order to have more power to be able to approach this new situation we have between our presidents of different nations that are working together. They have a dialogue, and they are discussing the next measures to take. So what we see is a very, very historic process that is very, it means maybe the end of a whole process of 30 years. We have the destruction of the industrial capacity in Ibero-America through Operation Condor and related operations directed by George Shultz and Felix Rohatyn. And then we have, as a result of that, the acceptance of globalization, which continued destroying our industry and nuclear capacity and infrastructure projects that were being built before 1970. So now we have a very surprising situation that is not so magic, because after the destruction of our economies, of course, there is the necessity of people and the opportunity for leaders to come up and really represent a solution for that. So we have this, what LaRouche calls the club of presidents, which we are trying to conceptualize, because they have a good a sense of the necessity of unity in the whole continent.
Emiliano, let me ask you a question on that.
The understanding of... Yeah.
Yeah. There are, in the U.S. press, the reports are that this is something we should be afraid of, that Bush and Cheney and others are saying that there's nationalism, it's undercutting the potential for the nations of Ibero-America to grow. Why is it that Americans should actually look at this and be happy about it, this process you described?
Well, actually, sure, that kind of messages are not going to the population. No, nobody is having that kind of fear beside the oligarchy. But people understand the value of these measures that are being taken, and it's absolutely supported by the population. The population has no fear of a growth of a wrong nationalism. They just are understanding, they are recovering what it belongs to each nation, to the citizenry of each nation. So there is no fear. No fear in the population about going in a wrong way. They just, maybe some people are not sure about actually how to complete this process. But these kind of fears that are trying to be promoted have no effect on people here in Ibero-America. I'm actually working in Argentina right now, in Mexico, but that's not a point of discussion for people.
And you're preparing a major conference on nuclear power in Mexico, which I just found out today will be including Argentina. And are there other countries that are going to be involved? And why don't you tell us what this conference will be about?
Well, this thing starts as an idea, and after that they grow. So we have the main point was to do it in Mexico City, but now we have the opportunity to do same in Argentina, since we have a very good, in both countries, we have a very good relation right now with unions related to the energetics, to the energy infrastructure, and we have a growing relation with the Congress as in general in both countries. We are we have put LaRouche's webcast in Mexico for the first time on April 27th, and that created a real effect on people, since we have been inviting every single office of congressman in Mexico. So now everybody knows what LaRouche is proposing and what it is LaRouche's analysis about the imminent collapse of the world economy. So in Argentina and Mexico, we are trying to put together what is very, very important. There are three parts that needs to work together, and we are putting them together since they cannot do it by themselves. We have the unions related with this. We have the scientists, and we have the politics that need to work together and have a discussion about how necessary is to launch right now a giant process process of construction of nuclear power in the whole continent. And how to do that, that's our part, since we have the economic ideas that LaRouche has given to us as member, as youth in Ibero-America, that have been looking for this for many years, to have a solution for our nations. So LaRouche represents that, and it's actually not easy, but very very fluid.
Well, let
since
me.
The ears in Ibero-America are open to these kind of solutions.
Well, I'd like to ask you one more question in this segment, Emiliano. I know in Mexico, very often from my own travels there, when you talk to people about the economic crisis in the United States, they don't believe it. They think the United States is always powerful. The dollar is everything, and that's why there's been a support, even if it's reluctant, for free trade and globalization. Is that changing now? Are people in Ibero-America beginning to understand that the U.S. economy is collapsing?
Well, they are understanding because we are telling them that. Since the media is not being working on saying the truth, so that's our job. And people is getting really shocked about the crisis of, as Danny was saying, the hyperinflation based on raw materials, and then we are the briefing related to the situation of General Motors, Ford, Visteon, and Delphi. It's very shocking. People doesn't know that.
All right. Thank you, Emiliano.
But now they understand why these companies are coming to Mexico. Okay.
Okay. We I'd like to get back to you in a few minutes with some more questions.
Some delay.
Yeah. Let me just ask you, Dennis. I understand yesterday the peso had a 2% drop. There were other kinds of emerging market currency collapses. What do you know about that?
Chaos. We're in a period of chaos. The daily oscillations are not really the particular thing to pay a lot of attention to, because they can go up stratospherically in one day and plummet stratospherically the next. I guess you don't plummet stratospherically, but, you know, collapse enormously. The point is we're in a period, a zone of utter instability, in which the entire approach of trying to measure or calculate or act in an economy based on financial and monetary aggregates simply does not function. There's a disconnect, a delinkage. It's a fundamental philosophical and economic question, which LaRouche has described at great length, and it's now become a practical political question. The world financial markets are spinning completely out of control, and if we are to actually get the economy, the real economy, back on its feet, people are going to have to master LaRouche's ideas on physical economy and make political and economic decisions based on physical economy rather than on these financial considerations. The only thing the financial side tells you is that this thing is blowing up out of control. Now, in that regard, I wanted to just throw into this discussion what was on the second most important thing that was said in the world on April 27th, in my view. The first most important thing that was said was, of course, LaRouche's webcast, which was just mentioned, where he laid out the global strategic picture. The second most important thing, however, was said by the president of Argentina, Néstor Kirchner, who is significantly influenced by LaRouche's ideas. Over this recent period, the greatest attention and headlines have been grabbed by the nationalization of oil and natural gas in Bolivia by the Morales government, and that is quite significant for the reasons of control of raw materials that I was mentioning earlier. But I think quite more significant than that May 1st announcement of Morales was what happened 4 days earlier on April 27th, where Kirchner announced that they were going to be building the first high-speed railroad in Ibero-America, connecting the cities of Buenos Aires and Rosario. This is a distance of about 300 kilometers or 180 miles. It's going to be a high-speed electric rail line, not a maglev, but nonetheless will go 250 to 350 kilometers an hour. But what he said in discussing this, I think, is really fundamental, because he said this, and I'm reading a quote. He said, "Anywhere in the world you go, you can see that railroads are fundamental." And then the punchline, "but their profitability is not financial." Uniting the country through a modern high-speed railroad is fundamental for the citizenry. The country must be united by the infrastructure it needs. In other words, he's posing a fundamental question that the way you make decisions about economic policy are not on the basis of financial and monetary considerations. You make decisions based on the physical economic well-being, the general welfare of the entire population. And this is a sea change which is going on. It's a monumental shift occurring in all of Ibero-America at this point, led most consciously by Kirchner, clearly queuing off LaRouche's ideas, but where the entire continent is being pulled in this kind of a direction. So that the world of the financial meltdown of this wild speculation, there is an alternative being presented centered on LaRouche's ideas on auto reconversion in the U.S. and what Kirchner is heading up in South America around this idea of the President's Club, which Emiliano was discussing.
What's also interesting, Dennis, in contrast to what poor President Bush is saying, where he came out last week and said the economy's in better shape than it's been in years. Now, in keeping with that, we're getting some emails in. Let me direct an email to you, Dennis, and then we'll probably take a short commercial break and then come back with more questions for Summer and Emiliano. Lawrence from Los Angeles says, given that it's not clear what the Congress will do, what can the average person on the street do to protect themselves with all this uncertainty? Now, that's sort of a common response you get from people who don't necessarily see what we are doing. How would you answer that, Dennis?
Well, there's two things that you can do. One is that you could start collecting pennies. And because if you get enough of them, you're going to be a millionaire. Because the way things are going, unless, of course, the world blows apart, which it will under this regimen, you get enough pennies and you're going to be a millionaire. But all kidding aside, seriously, there is no solution. There is nothing safe that can be done under conditions of a global financial meltdown. There is no safe place. The only safe place is in the political movement and the alternative which LaRouche is constructing at this point. And I must say we're having an incredible impact in Washington. We're seeing more serious conceptual discussion going on in congressional offices than has happened in years, where they're really facing the fundamental issues of what's behind LaRouche's auto reconversion proposal, which is not simply let's produce more cars. That's not the idea at all. We don't need more cars. What you need to do is to take the one-half to two-thirds of the installed capacity of machine tool capability of the auto industry and reconvert that to the kind of transition to a high-tech economy in energy and infrastructure and so on that's required both in the United States and internationally in places like Argentina. That's the only thing that's going to work. You can either take a losing strategy, which is most popular, but it's going to lose, or you can take the only possible winning strategy, which is to help build the LaRouche movement as rapidly as possible, especially the LaRouche youth movement, who in turn are building a very large political bonfire under the behinds of some people in Congress who are feeling the effects of this.
Well, I can tell our listeners from having been at the California Democratic Party convention two weeks ago, and meeting with statewide candidates in California and Texas, they are looking for solutions. They realize there's nothing on the landscape outside of what Lynn is saying, and it's largely a question of our continuing the mobilization, and we'll be back in just a minute and a half to talk to Summer about that. You're listening to The LaRouche Show. This is Saturday, May 13th, 2006. The LaRouche Show is live on the web every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and each week we take up the issues that are of vital importance to your survival and also your opportunities to participate as a citizen in a republic come from the discussions we have on these shows. For those of you who would like to subscribe to the EIR so you can be not just involved in the process of supporting LaRouche, but developing the alternatives and the political movement, you can call us at 888-347-3258. It's a free call, 888-347-3258. If you tell them you heard about it on the LaRouche Show, you'll probably bring a smile to them. You'll still have to pay for the EIR, but it's a worthy investment. Now, the other thing is that on June 9th, and I'm giving you advance notice, but June 9th, Lyndon LaRouche will be doing his next international webcast. It will be in Washington, D.C., It will be 1 p.m. Eastern Time, June 9th. Coincidentally, perhaps, the same day that Tom DeLay will be taking his much-delayed departure from the U.S. Congress. So June 9th will be the next international webcast by Lyndon LaRouche. So we're back to the LaRouche Show. Summer, I'd like to ask you if you can just give a kind of a summary, region by region, as to what we're doing, what the LaRouche Youth Movement is doing right now to get this legislation on the agenda and passed.
Well, I guess I'll start in California. We just recently went to Sacramento. That was the day before yesterday. And we had several different meetings up there with aides to senators and assembly members. Down in Texas, you've got the Lakeisha Rogers campaign. And they, as you brought up, I think you brought up in the beginning, they just had this Bandera County Democratic Party meeting last night. Or no, this is
that's
today.
Actually taking place right now in just outside of San Antonio. Keisha is addressing the delegates and party leaders in Bandera County.
That's how up to date we are. I don't even know when it's happening. So that's happening right now. In Michigan, yesterday they were in both Flint and Adrian, which are two heavily hit cities, especially concerning Otto, which had whole communities that were based on Otto. In Boston, yesterday they had a meeting with a high-level aide to an elected official. And yesterday in Washington, D.C., they were all over Capitol Hill organizing and had a few meetings yesterday, and they had several throughout the course of the week in Washington, D.C.
And I assume also the work in the Midwest is extensively deploying into the unions, especially the United Auto Workers.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. They did, however, yesterday address a Democratic, I believe it was a Democratic Party county meeting, which did have some people who are, everyone's there because of the auto situation. I guess the way to look at it is that if you have auto collapsing anywhere in Michigan, you're going to have people who are affected by it, especially Democrats.
Mm-hmm. And Summer, the LaRouche Pack has produced a DVD on the auto sector and the importance of this intervention. I assume we're getting that out wherever we have it.
Yeah, at this meeting, they sold a few of them, and people wanted to buy them. I don't know if there's any other there isn't any other documentary on retooling auto. There may be documentaries about maybe how bad it is, but there's no solution. And there was a big response reported from the youth who addressed this Democratic Party meeting of people who wanted to put in money and get this DVD.
Yeah, the auto DVD, retooling DVD, is available if you call us. So if you call the 888-347-3258 number, we do have limited copies of that available, so you can call up and ask for that. Now, Emiliano, there's an election coming up in just a little over a month and a half in Mexico to choose a new president. At this point, looking at it from the outside, it looks like the three candidates are at best not up to the standards and perhaps even irrelevant for the processes going on. To what extent have you picked up what's going on in the election, and if there's any shift going on in the among the candidates based on the work of the LaRouche Youth Movement?
Yeah, well, actually, there are actually five candidates, but three are the most important. And what we are doing to have that, no one is ready to lead the nation. No one is ready to lead Mexico to confront the reality, because they don't live in reality. They are not speaking about reality. So they are trying to win the election, but they are not getting prepared or presenting a plan to fight in this moment of history. So what we are doing is trying to get together the youth of every country, not to talk about who is going to win, which party is going to win, but how to make Mexico win in this time of history. And that's very, very funny, because the youth is not being subjected absolutely for its candidates. They know, no youth in any party recognizes, no youth thinks that his candidate is ready for to be in government. They know they are lacking a lot of sense of reality, and they understand, the youth understand, that we are saying is important and real. So we have been having different kind of meetings, and we are trying to make a dialogue, not a debate, because debate is to make someone win, but we are trying to establish a dialogue between the youth of every party to speak about how to confront this situation. And it's very open.
Are the youth responding positively to the developments in Argentina and the potential for this Club of the Presidents?
Sure. Well, they know, they don't. They see there is something very important happening from the south of Iberoamerica. And I'm telling them personally that we are lacking of Mexico, actually, right now. We need Mexico right now in shape. We need Mexico with a real leadership, so we can complete the whole pack of nations that are moving in the same direction. So that's becoming a big responsibility for the youth here, because if they have a month and a half, something like that, to really establish this discussion about reality. If not, if they need to do it in this period of time, then it is going to become very, very hard. But everybody respects and understands a little bit, at least, about what's going on in the south between Kirchner, Bachelet, and now Morales with his decision. And this idea of they are talking, they are having discussions continuously. They know that.
Harley, if I could throw in a question to Emiliano on this.
Sure.
Which is, when LaRouche was down in Monterrey recently, he met with the youth of the continent, including yourself, and one of his main proposals was that you begin a Spanish-language internet publication, which you began to do immediately, called Prometeo, and I think there are about five or six issues out. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that has worked to get these ideas out among the youth?
Yeah, well, the idea was to make something that it's very, it should be efficient, it should be working well with the activities that the youth is having, the way the people now lives, and this kind of network we can have through internet. So, LaRouche told us, he gave us this idea, and we did it in a week, and after that we have it already right now five industries and over the internet. And this idea of Prometeo is to give a very concise idea of what kind of world they are living in and what's the solution. So every
Hello, it sounds as though we've lost Emiliano for the moment.
Stand by.
Prometeo is pushing for kind of... must be. Hello?
Yes.
Sure, yeah, okay.
All right, well...
Do you hear me?
And how can someone get Prometeo if they'd like to read it?
They can go through the website. If they go to the English website, WLYN.com, they just go to the link that says Espanol or Spanish, and on the front page, they're going to find the last issue of Prometeo. And they can send it through email through all their contacts, as we do. We this is like a chain. You know? We send it to all our network of contacts, and it is for them to resend it again to the contacts. And it works. People do that. So we are having the best response from our contacts that we didn't have with other things. We are having this Prometeo, since it's written by different youth in different nations. Every single Prometeo, it has the participation of youth from Argentina, Peru, Colombia, or Mexico, and people are very surprised about that, about having this this kind of people working together and conveying this quality of ideas. So we are expecting that it's going to grow, and we need to establish it as the main way for our youth generation to get informed, since they're going to find what we are saying in any other kind of publications.
Well, Emiliano, you'll probably be happy.
I'd like to say something else.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, because I really need to transmit this idea. We're going to have a forum right now in a month, actually, about January 15, which is about the same process that you're talking about in the U.S. We need to reconstruct the infrastructure in Ibero-America. So we're going to have this forum that we talked before, but it's going to be focused on the idea of a transformation of the economies from being oil-based economies to become nuclear-based economies. To have to build this array of nuclear plants in Ibero-America that will provide the amount of energy that is needed to bring up the economy to a level of human economy, not to the level we have right now, full of poverty and problems. So this idea of the forum will happen in Mexico and Argentina. They will be connected together as a video conference, as we did it before with other conferences. So we're going to make them, these participants and the youth that we're going to bring in, these participants, as I said, unions, scientists, and politicians, to see each other in a continental fight for something which is the only solution, and it must be implemented right now, which is going for a nuclear economy and the whole process that it brings to the economy, not just through the production of energy, but also the production of drinkable water and hydrogen to replace the petroleum that we are having right now. And, of course, the whole scientific development that it brings to the nations. So that's happening in a month right now. We are organizing it through the syndicates. Since the last thing about this is there was a forum for unions related with energy in Mexico City. So we contacted, every syndicate, every union in Ibero-America was there, and they have information about LaRouche. They have information about what LaRouche is proposing related with nuclear energy in order to bring up the economy, and everyone, every single one, was interested, and they want to participate also.
Very good, and I can tell the listeners who have not yet seen it that Prometeo is a beautiful publication, and Emiliano, you'll be glad to hear that Spanish speakers are looking at it in California and in Texas because, as you know, we've had these very large demonstrations against the fascist immigration bill of Tancredo of Colorado. And one of the things that the LaRouche Youth Movement in the United States is doing is calling the attention of people who speak Spanish to that publication that they can get from the W. Lim site. Dennis, let me bring a couple of emails up for you, because there are people who are quite focused, as you might expect, on this question of strategic metals. There's a question from Eugene, who writes, we know people who are putting their money in gold and other metals. Do these really hedge against a collapse? What happens in that situation? And then he said, also here in California, we were excited about the new infrastructure being pushed by our illustrious governor. Then we heard that Schultz and Roetten were behind it. Is this true? Can you comment? Well, I can take the second part, but is gold really a hedge against a collapse?
Well, no, it isn't. And actually, it is related to the second part of the question as well. You've got to start from the standpoint of the physical economy and the requirements that are needed to maintain and develop the entirety of the world's population, past, present, and future. From that standpoint, you then have to work out what the requirements are in the basic bill of materials, both of the major consumption items and production items and infrastructure items that must be produced if people are to have a tolerable or a decent standard of living in which their creative capabilities can be developed. That requires a certain amount of food being produced. That, in turn, requires a certain amount of capital goods. to be able to produce that food. It requires energy production. It requires infrastructure to raise the overall productivity. In other words, you have to start the way our founding fathers started, as Hamilton prescribed in his report on manufactures, with the central question of the development of the physical economy in order to develop the productive powers of the labor force. You then turn to the issue of the financial side or the monetary side and simply make it adequate or appropriate to achieve those physical economic results. Today's world financial system is completely disastrous and has to be replaced 100%. There is no way to hedge against a collapse. This thing is going down, period. We have over $400 trillion in global financial aggregates of all sorts with no backing whatsoever. There is no way to defend against that. The system must be replaced. There is no alternative. And one of the critical questions on the physical economy, as I was mentioning, is to develop the kind of infrastructure that cannot possibly be developed, in fact, by the private sector, because it requires investments of over 25 to 50 years before it reaches its maturity, its economic life, such as energy systems, water management systems, and so on. The Rohatyn proposal, or the Schultz proposal, to do this from the private sector is a bad joke, because it will never happen from the private sector. All that this is meant to be a boondoggle, taking up an issue that does concern people, but making a boondoggle out of it in order to back up the financial interests who Rohatyn represents, as in Lazard Frere. So there must be, there is no alternative to a government-led global financial reorganization, which places the development of infrastructure center stage with the role of the public sector, the state sector playing the primary role, which is, of course, the very guts, the heart of LaRouche's automobile reconversion program. Nothing else is going to work. Gold isn't going to work. Silver isn't going to work. Nothing is going to work.
You have to go
with LaRouche.
I think it should be just reiterated also the difference between what Schultz and Rohatyn are proposing is that the states take on a bonded debt, which the states don't have a means of paying off except from revenue. And revenue is generally collapsing, which means that it sets up the stage for the private companies to buy up the state, what's been produced by the state for a nickel on the dollar, and turn it into toll roads, charge prices that people can't afford in any case. But it brings up the difference between federal credit and various kinds of phony financing, such as the derivatives, such as the stealing of pensions. Dennis, to what extent do you think this idea of federal credit is understood? Because I just got a report from the youth here in Houston. They were at a platform committee hearing this morning, and they emphasized this idea of federal credit, and people kept saying, yes, but we can't take on the debt. So once again, why don't you illuminate our listeners on this question of the difference between federal credit and just the debt on a budget?
Yeah, I have to agree that people by and large don't get this, because we're talking about a generation or two who have been completely brainwashed with 30, 40 years of a paradigm shift in which the way people have been taught to look at the economy is from the financial side outwards rather than the physical economic side outwards. All the more so if they've had the misfortune of being educated in economics at any one of our major universities, then you know for sure that they're certified brainwashed lunatics. And I can say that with complete assertion on this thing, because I'm a recovering victim of economics brainwashing training at the universities.
So it's a clinical assessment, not a name calling.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, after you've made your clinical assessment, then you can call people by their proper scientific name. And these economists are utter lunatics. The idea that there's a complete difference. Look at what Hamilton did and look at what happened under Lincoln and so on. The federal government issues credit for the purpose of economic development, whose solvency, whose backing is guaranteed by an ongoing development of the productive powers of labor and the growth in general of the physical economic wealth of the economy. That's what assures that it can actually be paid off. what happens with the normal argument that you get from people who look at credit being issued from a simple financial standpoint is they figure, well, that's a bubble that could either keep growing forever, or they look at it from the standpoint of, well, we're not going to have the resources out of our operating budget or out of the salary I'm now getting to be able to pay this off. The whole thing cannot be understood unless you start your thinking about economy by thinking of the physical economic parameters first. As soon as you catch yourself starting your thinking on economics by thinking in dollars and cents and credit and prices, then you're all off to a wrong start and you'll never get it right. And this is the central difference in terms of how our economy was actually organized, the genius of the American system, of our constitutional system, as opposed to, for example, all the European systems, which are based on central banking and parliamentary governments, where credit is viewed as an interest, viewed as an instrument created by the private sector, that is to say, by private financial interests. And that's the central difference. The government is in charge under our constitutional system with guaranteeing and ensuring the development of the general welfare of the entire population, not of a handful of financial interests.
There are two LaRouche Pack publications that go through this in some detail that I would recommend to listeners who want to pursue this. One is called Capitalizing the Recovery, and the other is the Prolegomena for a Party Platform, the FDR Legacy. And both of these are written by Lyndon LaRouche, and they're available by calling us at the number that we've given you before. I'll give it again, 888-347-3258. This is the LaRouche Show. We have about 9 minutes to go. Summer, let me ask you if you have an idea of what's on tap for this week. Do you have much of a sense of what the deployment is going to be?
Well, not exactly on all the locals. We're still trying to get used to having that. It's never been concisely done before like this. However, I sent you an email, and I also sent it out to the different local, or the two locals in California, the different districts of the congressmen who testified in the original e-hearings that Representative George Miller started up in California concerning auto.
Yeah, there are a number of California congressmen on that list.
Yeah, and their cities. So maybe we can, in California, go to their different cities and find out exactly why they testified, what sort of industries are in these cities. And as for the Midwest, I know what they're going to be doing is going to probably the highest density, I think, of auto and automotive forms of energy. So they're going to be going out in some way out there. And that's pretty much it, and consolidating this, building a real infrastructure around getting up-to-date knowledge on what our youth movement's up to across the board in the United States.
Well, there's a beautiful map in the new EIR, the May 12th issue of the EIR, of the plants that are slated for being shut down or sold off. And, again, people can get that. Now, Summer, on this question, I find it somewhat interesting that the necessity is forcing a kind of structure to be set up. It's, of course, spontaneous in its nature because you can't always plan where things are going to take place. But for the youth movement, this is, as Lyndon LaRouche conceptualized it, this is a change because you're actually having a sense of the total deployment. And obviously it's been a little difficult to get it going, but do you think you've got the mechanism set up for it to work?
I think so. I think being out here for a while longer, a week or so, we should have now we pretty much have a good process going on. But it's definitely something that is it's a bigger responsibility for the youth movement to get reports in that are strategically relevant, and the kind of thing that where you kind of start to get a broad picture of everything, of what kind of responses you're getting, what is it that people should be leading with in the field, what kind of effects, what something that might seem like it's not in any way related to our organizing might have is is most likely directly connected to what we're doing out in the field, organizing as a youth movement across the United States and also internationally.
Well, I'd like to pose to Emiliano, it sounds like the same kind of process is involved in producing a weekly publication where you have to evaluate everything from the top and then figure out what kind of input you need from the strategic heights. Is that basically what you've been doing with the Prometeo, Emiliano? Did we lose Emiliano?
Hold on. Hello? Okay. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sure. Okay. Yeah, the situation is that people, we are making people understand the value of this moment, but also the necessity for them to recognize that these measures, for example, by Bolivia is good, but it's not necessary. Now we need a new world order, a new kind of economy in our planet. And of course, we are getting closer for our continent to accept the new Bretton Woods that Helga Zedlarushi is proposing. So that's something also that we're gonna launch as a campaign here, because people now will understand more clearly that this is good, what's happening is good, and the infrastructure must be constructed, but it cannot be constructed under this system of globalization. So the main point is a new economy, a new kind of economy based on Lerush's ideas. So we are getting close to that, and that's our work.
Okay, well, Emiliano, I'd like to thank you for being on with us today. Dennis, I have another question for you. This will probably pretty much wrap up our show. But Emiliano mentioned the idea of a new Bretton Woods. Again, this is something that I think a lot of people don't understand. But it's clear that there's been a lot of talk in the background. Why is it that you need fixed exchange rates?
Well, simply because if you do start thinking in an economy from the physical economic standpoint and not the financial standpoint, you then have to design a means of exchanging and trading and investing in future production of those physical economic goods and the powers which produce them in using a financial system or a monetary system which allows that to occur in a way shaped by your physical economic decisions. In other words, so that you don't create a Frankenstein monster of a monetary system which takes on a life of its own. In other words, you have to have a fixed exchange rate between different currencies so that people who either trade in or who invest from one currency into another have some rough idea of the value of what they're going to be investing in between those two currencies from one moment to the next. If you have a situation of complete fluctuation and then speculation based on that fluctuation, there is no way in the world that you can actually invest in something whose life expectancy is 2, 3, let alone 20 or 30 years down the line.
So you just end up with either cheap labor and exploitation of the underdeveloped sector, or else eventually it all grinds to a halt.
Yeah, you have exactly that going on today. You have the race to the bottom, where people are looking for ever cheaper sources of labor, and that logic ends you up exactly where it ended up in Hitler's Germany, in concentration camps that had extremely cheap labor, at least for as long as they were alive, and before they were killed off in the gas ovens, which is exactly what the Dick Cheney policy is for the economy. So it does grind to a halt at the same time that the financial aggregates go through the stratosphere. And that's the situation we're facing. The world today is looking at the United States, and it's looking at the United States of Lyndon LaRouche for answers. Anyone who has half a bit of sense knows that this cannot be resolved without the fundamental change coming from the United States. And so you have from as places as far away as Russia, where you have Vladimir Putin this week giving a rather extraordinary State of the Union presentation where he talked about the need for adopting policies along the lines of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, where he restated that Russia will guarantee its own economic development and would not be carried along by the maelstrom of the world financial system. You have people all over Ibero-America, as we were discussing, who are turning in that direction. And that means one thing and one thing only. Those are the ideas of LaRouche, as carried forward by the LaRouche youth movement around the world. And I think the kind of coordination which Summer has been talking about, which is indeed getting in shape, is of extraordinary importance towards building together that world coalition of forces.
Well, I think also the report from Emiliano today on the coordination between Argentina and Mexico is of precisely the same kind of effort that we see in the war room in Leesburg, and it does give us a sense of the tremendous potential out there. And as we'll get more reports in the coming weeks, I think the listeners now have presented to them a very clear picture. It's time for action. Study these ideas, work on them, but don't sit on the sidelines. The battle has been engaged, and we've got an excellent opportunity to win. Emiliano, Summer, and Dennis, thank you very much for participating with us today on the LaRouche Show. LaRouche Show is on every Saturday, and we'll have another show next week to take up these topics and see how things have developed in the course of the week. So thank you very much, and goodbye.